morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January the 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. Mozambique's President Philippe Nyusi and his wife Isaura Nyusi have gone into isolation after testing positive for coronavirus. In South Africa, the man accused of setting the country's parliament complex on fire appeared in a Cape Town courtroom Tuesday.
South Africa's national prosecutors say the suspect was caught by police with an explosive device and with stolen laptops, documents and crockery.
That is Vicky Stark reporting from Cape Town in South Africa. More on this story ahead. Authorities in Cameroon say that thousands of people in the country have gotten the COVID-19 vaccine, and so they can attend the Africa Football Cup of Nations.
I've been hearing about them, but I've not seen them. This is an opportunity for me to take my vaccination and get to the field to see them. Most of the people are taking this vaccination now just because of the Nations Cup.
In Kenya, the Independent Medical Legal Unit is calling for local police to be investigated over the death of 14 Kenyans during the enforcement of COVID-19 protocols. We'll have these stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And let's start off in Mozambique, where the country's president, Philippe Nyusi, and his wife, Isaura Nyusi, have gone into isolation after testing positive for coronavirus. Charles Mwangiro brings us this report from Maputo.
According to a presidential media statement, President Nyusi and his wife are not showing any symptoms, but have gone into isolation as a precaution. Mozambique's Minister of Health, Armindo Tiago, said on State Radio Mozambique late on Monday that the positive diagnosis was confirmed after a rapid test for the new coronavirus. He says His Excellency, the President of the Republic, and his wife decided to carry out a test for SARS-CoV-2 for precautionary reasons. It was a rapid test, says Tiago, and the rapid test was positive. Due to it being a rapid test, he says, they will carry out a PCR test for confirmation. Tiago did not reveal the way the country's first family are isolating, but said they will be watched by a team of doctors. In a media statement, President Nyusi renewed his appeal for compliance with COVID measures to prevent and combat the pandemic. He urged all citizens over 18 years of age to get vaccinated. Mozambique has seen a surge in coronavirus infections in recent weeks, with daily confirmed infections averaging 3,000, the highest figure during the pandemic. Mozambique's official death toll from the virus stands at over 2,000 people from nearly 200,000 reported infections. Charles Mwangiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
In Mali, a coalition of political parties has rejected the military government's plan for a five-year transition before elections. Mali has been under pressure from West African governments to hold elections since a May military coup d'etat, the second in less than a year. From Mali's capital, Bamako, reporter Annie Risenberg says that analysts are weighing in on the significance of the move by the military to push off civilian rule.
Mali's military leaders recently released a new timetable for the transition period to regional bloc ECOWAS, proposing a five-year plan that calls for the next presidential elections to be held in 2026. The transition was originally projected to last 18 months, after a military junta headed by current President Assimi Goïta first took power in a coup that ousted President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta in August of 2020. Elections were previously scheduled for this February. A coalition of major political parties in Mali released a letter rejecting the five-year plan, having also boycotted 4 days of national meetings, which they say were only held so that the government could propose a longer transition. The spokesperson for the coalition, Amadou Keïta, says that the group is calling on current military leaders to respect the transition charter.
In transition, son objectif principal.
He says, the main goal of a transition is the end of the transition. It's to work for a return to constitutional order. Those who want to be in power should be candidates and submit to the will of the people. He says, we are a democracy. We are in a country where we have rights. We are a republic. Let's respect the law. One of the reasons given for the extension was the security situation, which has steadily declined for a decade. Dusuba Konate, who works for the Mali Office of Accountability Lab, a transnational group that promotes good governance, says there is some truth to the claim that elections cannot be held due to insecurity.
C'est vrai que l'argument de l'insécurité est un argument qui est vraiment très très lourd. Hein?
The insecurity argument is an argument that is really, really heavy, she says. It's an argument that is really going to play a part in this, because we're talking about democracy. What does democracy mean? Democracy means inclusivity, she says, and taking into consideration all of the Malian population. She says, we know very well that because of insecurity, there's a big part of the Malian population who won't be able to be taken into consideration in the next elections. Konate says that though many people oppose a longer period of military rule, some citizens support a longer transition because they appreciate seeing a Malian president who can confront the international community. But Mali's relationship with the international community, whether with its ECOWAS neighbors in ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, or with European countries, remains complicated. France recently pulled out of all but one of Mali's northern military bases, a decision French President Emmanuel Macron called a reorganization of its anti-insurgent Operation Barkhane forces, and which came after months of anti-French protests in Bamako. ECOWAS has threatened further sanctions on Mali if the military government cannot abide by a February election deadline. Nana Akufo-Addo, the current president of ECOWAS, is due to visit Mali Wednesday to discuss the transition timetable. An ECOWAS summit on Mali is scheduled for this Sunday in Accra. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Voice of America!
And still in Mali, 1 year after French military airstrikes in the town of Bonti killed 22 people who were allegedly attending a wedding, little has been done to investigate and render justice. Amnesty International researcher Osman Diallo tells Rikish Ryok.
To be honest, not much has happened since the UN report that clearly pointed out failings and the responsibility of the French military force in Mali and in the Sahel for the death of the 19 civilians in Bonti. As you know, the French have refused to divulge the intelligence they gathered that allowed them to conclude that this was a military gathering and not a wedding, has been stated by the witnesses and by the UN report. And so far, it has been an impasse. The Malian court that is in charge of human rights violations and terrorism and transnational organized crime has opened an investigation about Bonti, but we don't have much details about the progress and it's probably going to take time because one of the challenges is that many of the witnesses live in central Mali and specialized Pol doesn't have much resources in order to bring some of these witnesses and victims to Bamako in order to hear them out.
Is there a sense of a double standard in regards to what French troops or the French government is being held accountable for as compared to perhaps what Malian troops are held accountable for?
I think the sense of the double standard is very strong among the Malians because the damages in Bonti were considerable. People lost their lives and there was a refusal to acknowledge that these individuals were civilians or even to give credence to the testimonies made by the survivors and by their relatives. So there is a sense that this is a double standard, not only because of the findings of the UN report, the MINUSMA report that clearly pointed out the poor intelligence and assessment that led to that strike on 3rd of January 2021. And more than that, I think the sense of double standard is reinforced by the fact that French authorities, whether parliamentary or members of the government, have not shown any willingness to investigate what happened in Bonti. They have backed the conclusions of the French military, of the French government so far, and this is the only way victims of Bontis and their relatives to have justice by an investigation by the French judiciary, because Mali has signed a treaty with France in 2014 that gives the French government and the French judicial authorities the primacy of jurisdiction in cases of human rights violations and alleged infractions to international humanitarian law that could be made by the French troops deployed in Mali. And that is something that is very unfair.
How does this affect the larger context of Mali in general, especially when we talk about, you know, there was the recent coup?
Of course, they have repercussions because this contributes to the anti-French military presence that could be seen in Mali, Burkina Faso, in Niger over the last 6 months. As we know right now, with the alleged deployment of Wagner, the private military company from Russia that has allegedly been deployed in Mali. So I think that this double standard contributes to that to that tense narrative.
That was Amnesty International researcher Osman Diallo. He was speaking to VOA's Ricky Shryok from Dakar. Daybreak Africa continues. The man accused of setting South Africa's parliament complex on fire appeared in a Cape Town courtroom Tuesday. Authorities say they have finally contained the fire, which gutted large parts of the country's historic parliament building. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town, South Africa.
49-year-old Zandile Christmas Mafe was in court Tuesday to face several charges in connection with the parliament fire, including arson, breaking and entering, and theft. South Africa's national prosecutors say the suspect was caught by police with an explosive device and with stolen laptops, documents and crockery. They allege Mafe, a South African national, set fire to the parliamentary precinct, parts of which are 138 years old, using explosives or flammable liquid. Mafe's lawyer today said his client denies all the charges. Prosecutors have yet to state a possible motive for the alleged attack. The state on Tuesday asked for a one-week postponement of the trial so that the crime scene can be properly inspected. Firefighters are still working inside the parliament complex after a flare-up Monday, several hours after authorities said the blaze was under control. The fire destroyed several buildings, including the National Assembly chamber, where the president meets with lawmakers and where bills are debated. But officials say the priceless artifacts, books and historical documents housed in the buildings were saved. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. In a statement released after the resignation of Sudan Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, the Troika, which is made up of countries like Norway, the United Kingdom and the United States, plus the European Union, have expressed their continued support for the democratic aspirations of the Sudanese people. The statement says that former Prime Minister Hamdok played a major role in leading Sudan's democratic and economic reforms. His resignation as Sudanese Prime Minister, they say, reinforces the urgent need for all Sudanese leaders to recommit to the country's democratic transition and deliver on the Sudanese people's demands for freedom, peace and justice. The Troika warns that unilateral action to appoint a new prime minister and cabinet would undermine those institutions' credibility and risks plunging the nation into conflict, adding that it will not support a prime minister or government appointed without the involvement of a broad range of civilian stakeholders. In Kenya, the Independent Medical Legal Unit says that there were at least 198 cases of human rights violations in the country in the year 2021. The body is calling for police to be investigated over the death of 14 Kenyans during the enforcement of COVID-19 protocols. As Marino Jambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya, cases of extrajudicial killings rose by 31.3% as Nairobi County accounts for the largest single number of state-perpetrated human rights violations at 25.8%.
The newly released statistics on cases of police brutality documented by the Independent Medical Legal Unit have painted an ugly picture on the state of human rights in Kenya. The civil society organization have raised concerns and now wants the Kenyan government to prosecute the police officers behind the excessive use of force and torture of some Kenyans. The organization's executive director, Peter Kiama, said that there were 198 cases of violation of various degrees, including fatalities from police action in the year 2021.
2021 has been one of the worst years ever experienced between the police and citizens since the promulgation of the Constitution of Kenya 2010. 10 years down the line, with huge amounts of resources spent on policing reform, we expected a different result, not an era of torture, extrajudicial, summary and arbitrary executions, and enforced disappearances accompanied by very low levels of accountability.
In the report, Nairobi County accounts for the largest single number of state-perpetrated human rights violations at 25.8%. The legal unit raises concerns over human rights violations attributed to police. Mr. Kiama said that apart from the police officers, other security agencies are also taking part in extrajudicial killings and forced abductions.
It is important to note that other security agencies, apart from the police, are taking up the same bad attitudes and practices. Case in point being daylight abductions and enforced disappearances in the war against poaching, especially in central Kenya and upper eastern regions. We have seen cases in Nyeri of people being abducted in broad daylight and they disappear never to be seen again, or they disappear and we find them dead in forests and rivers in those regions.
The lobby group noted that men are most likely to be victims of state-perpetrated human rights violations, accounting for 82.83% of the torture, cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment, enforced disappearances, and extrajudicial executions. Out of 198 cases, 164 are males, while the remaining 34 are female victims. The group has expressed its concerns over the level of police violations as Kenya heads to 2022 general elections. Kiama says police must stop use of force while enforcing law and order.
We'll have a lot of public assemblies and protests, demonstrations, and therefore we would like to call out to the police to ensure that they police without unnecessary, unwarranted violence, use of force or use of firearms, in order to protect life and protect the dignity of our people.
As per the report, out of 198 violations, 43.9% were extrajudicial summary and arbitrary executions, 42.4% are of cruel, inhumane and degrading treatment and punishment, 12.6% are cases of torture, and 1% are of enforced disappearance. Among those tortured and executed were two middle-level public servants. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiombo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Authorities in Cameroon say that thousands of people in the country have gotten the COVID-19 vaccine, and so they can attend the continent's top soccer tournament, the Africa Football Cup of Nations, or AFCON, which begins on Sunday, January the 9th. Organizers are putting out the word that even if they have been vaccinated, fans will also need to present a negative test to enter the stadiums. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Motorcycle taxi drivers assemble and wait to be vaccinated against COVID-19 at Misasi Hospital in Cameroon's capital, Yaounde. Among them is 29-year-old Gabriel Nze, vice president of the local taxi drivers association. Nze says he wants to see the AFCON matches, and this is the only way.
I'm not taking the vaccination because I really trust it. No, my main point is to get to the field, to see players like Sadio Mane from Senegal, Mohamed Salah from Egypt, all of those strikers that they play in Europe. I've been hearing about them, but I've not seen them. This is an opportunity for me to take my vaccination and get to the field to see them. Most of the people are taking this vaccination now just because of the Nations Cup.
Nze says the Taxi Drivers Association has been encouraging members who want to see the AFCON matches to voluntarily get the COVID-19 vaccine. He said at least 300 motorcycle taxi riders have been vaccinated. Hotels, restaurants, and bus companies are also urging their staff to get the jab so they are eligible to interact with the thousands of people coming to Cameroon for AFCON. Fans are required to be vaccinated as well. Last month, the government said access to stadiums will depend on presentation of vaccination cards. The Confederation of African Football, or CAF, said fans will also be expected to show proof of negative COVID-19 test results that are not more than 24 hours old. Those who do not have the test results can be tested for COVID-19 at the entrance to football stadiums. Dr. George Allen Etundimbala is Director of Pandemics and Epidemics at Cameroon's Public Health Ministry.
Nous avons multiplié les sites de vaccination, fait venir d'autres doses de vaccination.
Dr. Mbala says besides increasing the number of vaccination centers, Cameroon has imported several million COVID-19 vaccines from China, Europe, and America so that AFCON can be played in excellent sanitary and health conditions. He says most people who are getting the vaccine tell vaccination teams that they do not want to miss AFCON, which is the most coveted football event in Africa. All football fans, players and officials coming from abroad are being tested for COVID-19 at airports, seaports and roads upon arrival in Cameroon. People testing positive for the virus are isolated and taken to hospitals for treatment. Authorities have not said how many visiting fans, players and match officials have been tested positive. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah militia verbally attacked Saudi Arabia in a speech this week, accusing the Gulf Kingdom of helping spread Islamic extremism around the globe and holding Lebanon hostage. Anli said that Hezbollah's sparring with Saudi Arabia deprives Lebanon of much-needed financial help. For VOA, Del Gavlak reports from Amman.
Iran-backed Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah launched a broadside against the Saudi king in televised remarks. Your Highness the King, the terrorist is the side who exported Daesh ideology to the world, and they are you, Nasrallah said, referring to the Islamic State group, as known by its Arabic name. He also accused Saudi Arabia of sending Saudi suicide attackers to Syria and Iraq, as well as for the war in Yemen. Last week, Saudi King Salman urged the Lebanese to end what he called the terrorist Hezbollah's control of Lebanon. Many Lebanese had hoped that the resignation of their former information minister would have ended the war of words between the two sides, but Nasrallah opened old wounds. Habib Malik, history professor at the Lebanese American University, points to Shiite Hezbollah's alleged attempts to proliferate drugs in the Gulf through fake fruit exports. He told VOA that Hezbollah also sends regular trainers, weapons, and personnel to Yemen to help the Houthi rebels against the Saudis, and it does Iran's bidding in Lebanon.
Nasrallah said that it's Saudi Arabia that has been behind Sunni radicalism and Daesh, especially in Iraq. I'm not whitewashing the Saudi record either. There is some truth in that. But one form of violation doesn't justify the other. This recurring attack on the Gulf and Saudi Arabia shows that Hezbollah could care less about the hundreds of thousands of Lebanese working in the Gulf who could easily be adversely affected by this kind of rhetoric. Hezbollah doesn't care about Lebanon or its interests. Hezbollah is simply carrying out the instructions and directives of an alien foreign country whose aim is to expand at any cost in the region.
Lebanon's Prime Minister Najib Makati criticized Nasrallah, saying it is not in Lebanon's interest to offend any Arab country, especially the Gulf states. Arab Gulf states have generously helped cash-strap Lebanon in the past. Critics blame Hezbollah for damaging ties with the Gulf, which has stopped financial assistance due to Iran's meddling in Lebanon's affairs. Over the past 2 years, Lebanon has experienced economic, political, fuel, power, and social crises, described by the World Bank as the most severe in the world. The Lebanese currency has lost more than 90% of its value, and 4 out of 5 Lebanese now live under the United Nations poverty threshold. Political observer Baria Alamuddin, writing in the Saudi Arab News newspaper, attributes Lebanon's worsening situation in part to Iran and Hezbollah, which, over the past 16 years, has wielded enormous influence. Hezbollah dominates the state, she recently wrote, but exists outside the principles and values of the state and undermines the state's sovereignty and legitimacy. Del Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. We are also on all social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very happy new year.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thank you.